Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You bitch! You have no idea how bad it gets.
Sally, I think I'll buy the flowers myself.
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
Don't stomp your little last season Prada shoes at me, honey.
John Callio, will you go round with me?
Don't fuck with me, fellas!
Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty, I can't stand it anymore.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a curve?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is Brokeback Mountain.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where over the years we've spotlighted the art forms behind a number of our favourite queer and Australian films. We've looked at cinematography, we've looked at costuming with Marion Boyce, mm-hmm. one of our country's most prolific costume designers. We've looked at writing, we looked at writing with Phyllis Nagy, who was the writer, the screenwriter of Carol. And this evening we are celebrating the unsung art of editing and one of this country's most remarkable, most iconic editors.
Most iconic? She's just been ordered the Order of Australia, Jill Bilcock. Like that, for her work in film editing.
Such a talent.
Huge.
And you
I'm
know,
I'm a huge fan.
You were fangirling over so Jill Bilcock when this, so we should actually say we're spotlighting not only Jill Bilcock, but a documentary that really celebrates her career.
Yes.
The documentary is Jill Bilcock, Dancing the Invisible. And I'm somewhat ashamed, Gina, to admit that I was not as across how extensive Jill's filmography was until I saw this documentary. You were fangirling at the first mention of this documentary.
But only because I've studied, you know, filmmaking and I've studied the industry that I've come across someone like Jill. Jill is someone that you kind of look up to. And even though I've studied screenwriting and she's an editor, she's the furthest point away from a screenwriter.
Mm.
She's such a natural storyteller. Now, when we talk about the kind of prolific work she's had, she needs to be a household name here in Australia because she's one of our most impressive female filmmakers and storytellers, because she's done things from Dogs in Space, we're talking back in 1986, Strictly Ballroom, Muriel's Wedding, Romeo and Juliet, Head On, The Dish, Moulin Rouge, Road to Perdition, Japanese Story, Elizabeth, I can keep going on, so The Dressmaker, Red Dog, you keep talking and I'll keep listening.
What
all
I
the films.
Love about
List.
Her
yes.
filmography is
Huge.
That not only does it include some of our most loved Australian
yes.
films, so many of them have queer dimensions.
Yes.
And not only that, but she's also worked on a really great range of international films as well.
Indian films, yeah.
I was actually surprised to see Elizabeth,
yes.
both Elizabeth films on Jill's filmography. I mean, the filmography is mind-bogglingly extensive, which
yeah.
is why, you know, if we are looking at editing and the unsung art of editing, she is the best person for us to look at that art with. And I'm thrilled to say that she is joining us
yes.
on the program this evening.
So am I.
You're going to have to do
I'm going to have to put down the fangirling and just, like, write down my
So
question.
We will be speaking with Jill about her remarkable career and the importance of editing. We'll be speaking with her later in the program. But we'll also be speaking with another powerful industry insider this evening. We'll be speaking with Sue Maslin, who is the producer of a number of much-loved Australian films. She produced A Japanese Story with Toni Collette, most recently
The Dressmaker,
which smashed not only everyone's expectations, I think, at the box office, but smashed box office records themselves.
And I think, again, reminded the audience out there that there is an audience for female, you know, driven stories with leading female protagonists, and that's what I love. That
well, I think it proved what we already knew.
We already knew, but yeah, so, good case study, good box office.
Well, we'll talk about that with Sue later in the program. So, two remarkable, important Australian iconic
women
film industry females. That's the other thing I have to say I love about this documentary. Not only does it give us insight into an art form that we don't celebrate often enough, it is fundamental to the success of a film. Editing, it's critical.
The documentary, it states it in its title, Dancing the Invisible. Good editing is invisible. You don't notice it. You don't know what's happening. Yet it can craft a story.
I feel like, though, in some of Jill's work, it's very visible, and that's what makes it so wonderful.
Romeo and Juliet is probably the best example of that.
Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
But not only does it spotlight the importance of editing, but I think at this time when we're having conversations about the importance of gender parity in the film industry, the importance of promoting and spotlighting female filmmakers, this documentary is so much more important. It really positions itself at a crossroads here between this kind of unsung art form and also the importance of celebrating powerful women in the film industry.
And that's the thing. I know when we saw the interview kind of come across that this was being released in July, and I was like, oh my God, Jill Bilcock, and everyone, you know, your eyes kind of glazed over. I'm like, how can you not know what all the work she's done? So I'm so excited when you were like, yes, I've seen the doc, and I'm like,
well, that's why documentaries like this are really important.
Yeah, and I think it's important for, yes, this is a great documentary for lovers of film to go and actually see. Those who are in the industry would really relish in this film.
Because we should actually say, I feel like this is also a history of the Australian industry in many ways. I mean, this takes us right back to kind of mid-20th century.
Well, that's the thing. She started back in the early 60s, and this is what the documentary covers, back at a time when in Australia there were no films being made. So there was literally no films being made, and Jill got her experience making ads because the government had implemented basically said if you're going to make any ads, they have to be Australian. And that's where a lot of people cut their teeth and learnt the craft of filmmaking, because there were no films getting made. I sadly see parallels of where we're going to. Just the other day, we were fighting for Make It Australian campaign is actually trying to get legs.
The Adelaide Film Festival is another example. The Adelaide Film Festival this year is spotlighting great Australian films because we are seeing across the industry this kind of...
Yeah.
Well, there's certainly an anxiety, isn't there, within the industry, and that's why it's so much more important that we do what we can to spotlight Australian films. And I think this filmography, Jill's filmography, is a wonderful place to start.
Every project, it's like starting your first film. It's no different than a writer looking at a blank piece of paper trying to begin.
Jill is the common denominator behind many of Australia's favourite films.
She's been the one editor I want to work with all the time.
Beginnings of movies have got to be way above sensation. You have to establish style.
Changing the rhythms and the beats in it is where she's an innovator.
The strength of the cuts, not just the way it was cut, the editorial philosophy.
Just cut it out if it doesn't work.
She's broad-minded about story. It's not just about film, it's about life.
Adventure is what will drive me. I love being out in a global situation.
She's had this kind of life where she's pushed herself into uncertainty all the time.
She's so full of life, so irreverent, but is incredibly respectful of other people's voices.
I want wild. I want innovative, unusual, and visually extraordinary.
She's not going to allow you to be self-indulgent.
It's a dance, and she makes you feel as if you're the perfect partner.
Jill Bilcock is one of the best film editors in the world.
You've got to cut the bogus.
and then it comes together as something quite emotional. And that's what life is about, isn't it?
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening, in honour of the release of Jill Bilcock Dancing the Invisible, we are celebrating the unsung art of editing this evening. And we have on the line now, joining us in the Outtakes studio, Jill Bilcock. Jill, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Now, Jill, I told my co-host Gina that I was going to ask the first question, but that's only because she's really nervous to have you on the phone. And what I'm doing now is throwing her under the bus. She is your number one fan.
And I'm not even an Gina. Editor, Jill. I'm a screenwriter. Hello.
Oh, well, that's much harder.
It is. Well, I've always said it's somewhat, well, no, I wouldn't say so, because you're equally one of the most important storytellers that we've had in our industry. And I've always said when you're writing a story, you have your dream team, you know, a dream director, a dream cast. For a lot of screenwriters, you are the dream editor to have at the other end, because you're the last remaining chance that we might get an authentic, gorgeous story out there. So is that enough praise, love?
Well, I think that's being overly generous. There has to be a script first to edit. And, you know, there is so much editing goes on every day for all of us, and I think we're all natural editors.
Yeah.
So, yes, somebody comes up with an original idea, I say congratulations to you.
Jill, I wanted to know what you've worked on the work that you have is absolutely prolific, but what is it that first attracts you to a particular story? Is it the script? Is it the team? Is it a director's vision? What is it that makes you go, I want to know more about this? I want to be a part of this journey.
Sometimes this will be a story that I've heard of, or I've read something in the paper, and you know, like Lion, I read a long time ago that story. Not that I edited that film, but the particular story, being an authentic story, attracts me to it. Stories with children in it often attract me, because you know you're going to get a lot of truth if it's done well. But generally, I'm very, very interested and drawn to the craft of the director as well, because I feel like it's such a hard job to direct somebody else's script, or maybe they've written it themselves. That is also helps. But to actually translate a story which is first written, then directed, then edited, it goes through three stages. And sometimes it goes through four stages if it comes from a book and then to a screenplay, to a director, to an editor. So it's a story takes, you know, goes a pretty rocky road along there. It's not always as easy as people might think, and I think you'd understand that.
Totally.
With what you do. It is an interesting path, and also it's the end of the road if it's going to go out on the screen.
Now, the documentary that we're celebrating this evening, Jill, is a documentary about you, Jill Bilcock, Dancing the Invisible, and it's really a celebration of your art form. Jill, perhaps you can let our listeners know, what is it that you love so much about editing?
It's looking, you have this, you have somebody's vision put in front of you, and certainly sometimes there's style and their ideas, and also it's working as a team. You're involved with a lot of people to come up with an end result, and it's all the way down the line from the time somebody comes up with an idea to the way it's shot, the way it's costumed, set designed, etc., the sound, all of it. All has to come together, and everybody along the way is actually adding to the storytelling the way they contribute. So it's working with a team, which is very attractive, and also it's you know, extremely gratifying when it's an exceptionally talented team.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, people say, oh, you save something. You don't really save it. You look at it from a different angle and you work it out and you make sure that it engages with an audience, because there's no point going on if it doesn't get seen.
Well, has there ever been a time, Jill, when you've been working on a film and you've thought, I just can't do this one. I can't bring this one together.
We're not going to shame anyone here.
But feel free to if you want to.
Throw them under the bus, Jill.
No, never. Never. No, there's always a story there.
Yeah.
And you can move things around. You can change things. The point of what editing is about is like the art of montage. So if you show, as Eisenstein said, you know, if you show a dog and then the mouse, you can almost get a bark, right?
Yeah.
You know, you add shots together to create something. So you turn things around, and just by rearranging shots or the order of a scene sometimes or deleting scenes can help create an outcome.
I like that you often talk about don't be indulgent, like cut the kind of fat. If it doesn't need to be there, just cut it out. And that is so important when it comes to writing as much as it comes to editing. But with the creative team that you were talking about, we know Baz Luhrmann and his creative team have often moved into your house during the editing process. Do you do that with all your creative teams, or Baz has got something special about him?
Well, no, that was probably early days when a film hasn't any money and nobody has any interest in it.
Yeah.
The money runs out and you want to get it finished and you want to see it done the best way possible. Plus, you know, they were very enthusiastic team creatively. So it wasn't difficult. We did manage. We, you know, scrapped around for whatever we could do. And also, you know, Baz has a personality that could, you know, engage, you know, half of the wildlife of Brunswick to join in and help if he wanted that to happen.
Let me ask you, Jill, your filmography is absolutely remarkable and features some of this country's finest films, including films like Strictly Ballroom, Muriel's Wedding,
the
Moulin
Dish,
Rouge.
My favourite.
Have you noticed any trends in Australian cinema, and where do you think our national cinema is headed?
Well, I'm hoping it's not headed in the way to please a particular type of audience, like an American audience.
Mm.
And I think that Sweet Country is a damn good direction to be going in.
Mm. Why is that?
To be brave, well, it's an Australian story that nobody's bothered really to tell.
Mm.
And also it involves some of our mistakes.
Mm.
And I think I think it's an important story to tell.
Oh, without doubt.
And it was told with such emotion and love of country.
Mm.
Jill, I'm curious, looking at your filmography, you know, so many people quite easily just put down the Australian film industry and say, film is dead. It's all about TV. It's all about streaming. You've not edited much in the field of television, maybe one or two pieces here, and there's one quite recent, 2017 Will, which is an American series. Is TV something you've just not been attracted to, or is that somewhere maybe you might see yourself going?
Well, I find TV very, very difficult. I think I take my hat off to people in television because it's fast and it's all about this country. You need to have more time to get the script right.
Mm.
People need to be paid properly to write.
Sorry, I thought it was a joke. No, yeah. But yes,
so,
yeah.
You know, television to me, because it's, you know, I've been brought up on my boss is the director. Television has a showrunner or a producer, and directors are brought in because it's, you know, like often several episodes. And I think there's very, very talented people to deal in television because it's extremely difficult.
Mm.
You're not just dealing with one thing, which is, you know, getting that film finished and out into the you know, out into the environment. But television is, you know, it has a lot more obstacles in its way and people to go through creatively to get the end result. And also at the speed it has to be done in is quite different.
Mm.
Although film is getting more like that.
Jill, I was really curious with the documentary Dancing the Invisible, when Axel first probably came and pitched this idea to you.
Axel is a director.
Axel's a, and he's actually one of the editors as well.
He is the editor.
Yeah.
Making this film. In fact, I was the person that was always running.
That's what I wanted to know, because on the credits there are two editors on this, and you know that I was kind of joking. Did it take two editors to edit Jill? But did you want to sit in the edit room, or did you just not want to?
Never wanted to sit in.
So then, how was it the first time that you saw this documentary?
Well, I didn't see it until it opened in Adelaide. When I went over there, and I really was pleased with what Axel had done. He'd found things that I never knew existed.
Yes, we heard about the bad girl Bollywood footage that you'd never seen before.
I know, what a shocker.
It was brilliant.
I mean, the reason I got those parts was because I was actually on my way to work in London.
And a year late, yeah.
A suitcase full of clothes where all the others had already sold all theirs and, you know, were living in the streets and, you know, hitting up heroin. So, I mean, I was probably the only one with a pair of shoes by that stage.
Look, it's such a remarkable documentary, Jill, and I think it's so important because you are a critical voice in our film landscape here in Australia and indeed around the world. And I'm thrilled that audiences can now celebrate your career with you. But perhaps as a way of concluding, the other thing I think is so important about this documentary is I think we're having conversations now within the industry about gender parity, and I think it's so much more so important now to celebrate some of our iconic female filmmakers. What are your thoughts about the state of the film industry now in terms of kind of gender parity how do you see this kind of conversation about gender parity in the film industry unfolding?
I think it'll play itself out, and hopefully people will realise that it shouldn't matter and it doesn't matter, and they'll be educated into feeling that it doesn't exist. You know, there shouldn't be any differences at all. And in my area, I've been criticised for employing too many women. And I've always just employed the people I thought were right for the job.
Yeah.
So there are, in my area, I don't think we have a male-dominated area, to be quite honest.
In editing,
I think it's to do with the fact that women have, I don't want to draw any lines because it's just as bad as being on the other side.
Mm.
But there is, there is a lot of patience involved and a lot of good observational skills needed. And possibly men choose more outgoing areas of the profession as opposed to editing or there's a lot in sound, mind you.
Mm.
But I think there's quite a lot of excellent picture editors that are female. So it's not something in my area I would worry about. But I do think that there'll be a lot of noise and hopefully children are born and don't realise that there should be any difference. And, you know, I grew up with a single parent, a mother that made me realise that there wasn't any difference. Mm. I never even considered that I had a problem in the industry or as a person going out into the world. So once, you know, children are born and don't think there's a problem and are already conscious and confident of the fact of who they are, no matter what they, you know, how they choose to run their lives, I think it'll become much easier. I know it's very difficult for people of culture, different cultures and people of different personalities who sometimes to deal with these kind of issues.
Mm.
But generally, I think if those that move forward, they should start doing it, and also then protect the ones that are not able to protect themselves.
I like that, dreaming without limitations. Let's hope that's a future for most of us.
Look, Jill, it's such a pleasure to have you on the program this evening. Thank you for talking with us and for celebrating this remarkable documentary with us.
Oh, look, it's been lovely talking to you both.
Thank you, Jill.
Well, that was Jill Bilcock. She is one of this country's most iconic editors. She is an unsung voice behind some of our most loved films, films like Strictly Ballroom, Muriel's Wedding, Moulin Rouge, Red Dog, The Dressmaker. I mean, the list goes on and on.
But why I want people to go and see this documentary that might not be interested in the background stuff of filmmaking.
Well, we should actually say there is a Q&A screening.
There is this Thursday
at Nova. So anyone who does want to go and have a look at the doco, this Thursday is a perfect time.
Look, it is releasing in July, but the reason I want people to go and see this film is because you look at the list of films that she's had a thumbprint on. There's going to be a favourite film of somebody's in there.
Mm.
But it's finding out how she made a difference. Like we were kind of, there's an article in the paper the other day that was talking about how important her, I mean, they talk about this in the doco, but she saved the line, "You're terrible, Muriel," in Muriel's Wedding. Because PJ Hogan got sick of it up to a point in time. I mean, you see cuts and, you know, so many times. He was ready to delete that. Imagine Muriel's Wedding without the line, "You're terrible, Muriel." Like these are the kind of, you know, finite decisions that Jill, you know, either make sure gets to screen or has a particular emotional resonance with a character. So she has had an impact on so many of our loved films, and it's, I don't know.
But I feel like that illustrates a broader point here, which is that, you know,
she knows how to reach that emotional.
But as we know, good editing is often invisible.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we watch a film, if the film is made well, we don't often see the manifold hands that have been on this piece. And so it is important to recognise some of the filmmakers that we don't often recognise, like editors, and this great art form of editing that is such an art form.
Mm.
So we are doing that this evening on Outtakes. We are celebrating good editing. That was Jill Bilcock we were speaking with earlier, who is one of this country's most iconic editors. And coming up after this, we are speaking with Sue Maslin. Now, Sue Maslin is the producer of the new documentary spotlighting Jill's career. She is also the producer of
Dressmaker.
A number of really iconic Australian films as
Japanese
well.
Japanese Story.
Yeah.
Road to Nil. Sorry, I'll just
The list
keep
goes
going.
On.
Yep.
So you are listening to Outtakes. We are celebrating strong editing. More coming up right after this.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Out into the street where all of the action is right there at your feet. Well, I know a place where we can dance the whole night away, and it's called the Moulin Rouge. Oh, just come with me and we can shake your blues right away. You'll be doing fine once the music starts. Oh, yeah. The beat of the rhythm of the night. Dance until the morning light. The words on your mind. We can leave them all behind. Celebrations right under the street lights. The scene is being set. A night for romance. A night you won't forget. So come join the fun.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9. This is Rhythm of the Night from Baz Luhrmann's smash hit Moulin Rouge, which is actually, did you know it's coming to Broadway?
Is it?
Yeah.
You would.
But the reason we're listening to this song, and I love this song, the reason we're listening to it is because so much of this film comes down to the way it's edited.
Oh,
so much
absolutely.
Of the film. And the woman behind that editing is Jill Bilcock. She's one of this country's most prolific editors. She's the woman behind some of our most iconic films. And we are celebrating her in the new documentary spotlighting her career. The documentary is Jill Bilcock, Dancing the Invisible. Now, it's been doing the festival circuit. It is having a broader theatrical release, hopefully later this month.
Yeah,
later. But there is also a Q&A coming up at Nova this Thursday.
This Thursday. So, you know, you can go and chat with Jill and maybe fangirl like I just did a bit.
Yes.
So in the theme of editing, hopefully you'll edit most of that out of the podcast, my darling.
Known for your fangirling.
Yeah, but who have I had the opportunity to fangirl? Okay, let's list them. Jill Bilcock, Anna Kokkinos, Rose Trochet. I mean, they're pretty worth fangirling.
They're big names.
They're big names.
Yes, we're very spoiled.
Very spoiled. You know, if Nicole Kidman came in here,
I wouldn't be fangirling, but
I'd have to protect her from you. Mr.
And
Daniel.
Alan, after
and
every. Alan. Alan's not
yeah,
with us this evening.
Sorry, Nicole, you are always welcome.
Always. We have spoken with Jill this evening about the documentary, but I was thrilled that we got to have a chat with Sue Maslin about the documentary as well. Our listeners may recognize Sue. She has been on the program before. In fact, she was one of our very first guests back in 2015, right around the release of The Dressmaker, which she produced. We had a long chat, actually, about the state of gender parity in the film industry.
It was also around the release of Gender Matters from Screen Australia,
correct.
Wasn't it, around the same time?
Because Sue has done a lot to advocate for gender parity in the film industry. She's written a lot. She's part of a number of different organisations which advocate for gender parity. And she's a really important voice, not just a filmic voice, but also an advocate. For
great mentor. In that space, absolutely.
So we were really pleased to sit down with her. And, of course, we had a chat with her about gender in the film industry. But first we wanted to pick her brain about this documentary and about the woman that it celebrates.
Jill is one of the great unsung heroes, I think, of the Australian film industry. She is the name behind so many iconic Australian films loved by audiences. So if you look actually at the top 15 all-time highest grossing Australian films, she's actually edited nearly half of them. There's Moulin Rouge, Red Dog, Muriel's Wedding, Strictly Ballroom, The Dressmaker. I mean, the list goes on and on. And this is not a coincidence. You know, she's just somebody that has this extraordinary gift of storytelling, and she just works, you know, with the director's vision, the producer's vision, you hope those are all aligned, and then with what you've actually got in the can.
The documentary Dancing the Invisible, like, I'm thoroughly excited that this is going out to a mainstream audience, because I mentioned Jill's name as the kind of the dream editor that you want to work with, and people's eyes glass over, and I'm like, how can you not know Jill's work? How can you not know what she's achieved? Was Japanese Story, though, the first time you got to work with Jill?
Funnily enough, I go way back to the late 80s with Jill, because when I was first starting out, I was writing and directing and producing a documentary called Thanks, Girls and Goodbye.
Oh, yes.
And I'd come down to Melbourne and was looking, you know, to find the right editor, and looked at some of Jill's work, and she had just done Strike Bound with Richard Lowenstein, which is an extraordinary film. And so I approached her then about coming on and editing. As it turned out, she was really tied up with Dogs in Space, and, we didn't get to work together, but I had always wanted to work with Jill ever since I met her at that time, and then finally got the opportunity when Sue Brooks and Alison Tilson and I made Japanese Story.
There's an amazing moment in the documentary where Sue Brooks actually introduces a really integral scene, and Jill was the kind of person who helped respect that vision of Sue's.
Yeah, it's an interesting process. You know, there's a lot of talk about creative collaboration and what that actually means.
Mm.
But I think there's a real gift, you know, when you've got an artist in the form of an editor who can sit down and talk to a director and find a way to genuinely understand what's in their head and what that vision for the film is.
Mm.
It's not an easy thing to do, and particularly when you know the director is a first timer and or early in their career. And Jill's worked with many, many directors very, very early in their career. If you look at Richard Lowenstein, Anna Kokonos,
Baz Luhrmann,
Brooks. So that requires not only really understanding what it is that they want, but secondly, taking the creative risk to really back that vision. And that means you have to fight like hell. And Jill is a fighter.
Do you think there's a sense that editors are, in a way, an unsung hero of a film? We don't talk a lot about editors, not nearly as much as we should, yet we talk so often about directors and writers. And why is it, do you think, that
writers, really? Do we talk about...
Well,
I wish. No,
writers get left out as well. Look, you know... I think it is a really under-recognised area of storytelling, and it really is storytelling that happens when you're in the edit room, because you're constructing meaning and you're constructing the emotional journey and you're constructing the narrative. And there's a million ways you can go. And the thing that I think happens with editing is that often if it's really, really good, it's actually quite invisible.
Yeah.
So it's like music, you know, great compositions don't necessarily always draw attention to themselves at all times. You know, and look, in this country, let's face it, there's just this obsession with the idea that the director is the sole voice.
Yes.
It is a creative collaboration, and, you know, the editor is certainly a very, very important part of that creative collaboration for any film.
I was really curious because, you know, knowing Jill's work and knowing what influence and what great artistry she's brought to so many films. I mean, they look and sound and feel the way they do because of the work that she's put in. When it came to her own documentary, though, I see there's two editors attached to this. Was she kind of allowed to go near the edit room, or they're like, no, Jill, step back, let go?
She was fantastic, but she really trusted Axel Grigor, who is the director and writer of this film. And Axel is a very, very fine editor as well. And she never asked to see a cut. She was happy to wait until the film was completed, thank God. But it took us two editors.
Well, that's the thing I giggled when I saw.
They would have been feeling the pressure. Can you imagine?
You would. You absolutely would, to go. And, you know, what's she gonna, is she going to give us notes? Are we going to have to go back?
She certainly gave us notes. At the end of the film.
Of course.
I wouldn't expect anything less.
The other reason why I think this documentary is really important is because we are tending to have more and more discussions, thankfully, about gender parity in the film industry. And obviously, it's really important as part of those conversations to spotlight women who are making a difference in the profession.
Indeed. And certainly in key creative roles, women have traditionally been really underrepresented. Funnily enough, in editing, there possibly is a slightly higher proportion of women, and some of the women editors that I've spoken to, where I've been curious as to why that might be, have said, well, it's probably because nobody knows they're there.
Yeah, true.
They don't know what we do.
Yeah.
Not a flashy upfront role, it's, you know, backroom role. And women, of course, have been behind some of the, women editors have been behind some of the really great filmmakers of our time. You know, if you look at Martin Scorsese, you know, he always, worked with his, woman editing partner. You're quite right, though. There is a particular focus now on, and so there should be, because those of us who've been in this business for a long time have seen these moments come and go and no proper change.
No,
I genuinely think that there is a groundswell and the opportunity for generational change now.
That was Sue Maslin. She is the producer of the new documentary Jill Bilcock Dancing the Invisible, which has been doing the festival circuit.
Doing really well on the festival circuit.
Hasn't it? Yeah. Having a broader theatrical release, hopefully later this month, but there are also screenings. There's a Q&A, for instance, this Thursday at Nova.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know Radiothon has kind of wrapped up and finished at the end of June, but...
We still want your membership.
We still need your memberships. Not just wants, it's wants and needs, Daniel. Right. So, but we have had a membership. Thank you, Katie from Clifton Hill, who's recently become a member. So if you need to reach out to us at all...
Need or a want, Gina?
Need or a want.
So well, often confuse my needs and wants.
Absolutely. So please, if you are looking to become a member, you can win amazing prizes, you know, tickets to shows, tickets to...
We often have a double pass to give away.
Yeah.
Not this evening.
Not tonight.
No, so next, let's move on. Maybe. we are spotlighting one of cinema's great unsung art forms, and that art form is editing. And
that artist is Jill Bilcock tonight.
Well, she is one of our most iconic, prolific filmmakers, editors. She's the editor behind films like Strictly Ballroom, Muriel's Wedding, Moulin Rouge, Red Dog, Elizabeth.
The Dish, my favourite Australian comedy.
The Dish?
The Dish.
Really?
Yes.
Was that a film about me? I'm joking. Totally.
Needs and wants
totally
there, Daniel.
Joking. Mm-hmm. Totally joking. Radio face.
back on track.
Back we'll on
edit,
track.
Editing. See, we'll edit all this that out of the, out podcast. Of the podcast.
Thank
That's,
you, Gina.
See the importance of editing.
Invisible editing.
Flawless.
Okay. More coming up on editing, more coming up on this remarkable documentary. We are speaking with Sue Maslin, the producer of Jill Bilcock, Dancing the Invisible, and more with Sue right after this. You're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are celebrating editing, the unsung art form that it is. And the reason we're doing that is because we are thrilled about Jill Bilcock Dancing the Invisible, the new documentary that spotlights one of our most iconic Australian film editors. We've spoken with Jill earlier in the program, and we're in the middle of our chat now with Sue Maslin, who's produced this film. But Gina, you know, just looking at the list of kind of Academy Award winning editors, I'm thrilled to see that actually in the past few years there's been a number of Australian films that have taken out the top award at the Oscars for best editing.
But there's also been women listed in the nominees. Well,
this is what Jill was saying, that perhaps this is one industry where there isn't
and Sue was mentioning this as well at the end of the interview. Martin Scorsese works with female editors, so looking across from La La Land, even. Yeah, I can see that. Moonlight.
But you know, Hacksaw Ridge in 2016, an Australian film.
Mad Max. late at night.
For someone of your age, maybe, Gina. I'm joking.
Social Network, yeah, I could see that.
There totally is a real art to good editing, and what there I is. Love is that this documentary, it spotlights that art, which is and as it has tonight, is starting conversations about some of these really important art forms that we don't celebrate often enough. Now we've been speaking with Sue Maslin, who
the executive producer of Dancing the Invisible. Yes.
I've been going with producer all evening, but she is in fact the executive producer of this documentary. And she sat down with us to have a chat about the importance of Jill's work, the importance of the documentary, but also the state of the industry at the moment. Sue does a lot to advocate for gender parity, and she spoke to us about why that's so important. Well, it's interesting because we spoke to you
2016.
I think it was 2015. December 2015.
Dates are
Yeah, the podcast dates might be a bit out. But I think it was December 15th, Sue, that we had you on the program last, and we had a bit of a chat about some of the issues that might be behind the disparity in the profession. Yeah. Do you think that we've made any progress since then in the last few years?
Yeah, progress has been across a few different fronts. You know, the whole business, screen business, and film in particular is in such an incredible state of disruption now worldwide that business as usual has gone out the door, and everybody's scrambling to look at, oh God, what's working in this new paradigm, you know, the digital paradigm we're in, where audiences basically are really not going to cinemas in the way that they used to. And it's not surprising when there's just so much entertainment online now. And we've seen, you know, in the last 10 years, you know, the rise of series television and subscription video on demand, the explosion of platforms. So the attention now is away from cinemas. So finally, there's been a bit more awareness of, okay, well, who is actually going to cinemas? And a realisation of something that we've known for a long, long time, and that is women go to the movies, guys. We really do. And we're being underserviced. There's not been enough stories, you know, by and about women's lives, and they've recognised that, and more importantly, they've recognised that those films can be commercial.
And thank God for the dressmaker. And you
thank God for the dressmaker, because, you know, at the time I was trying to finance it, I was constantly told it was limited audience, i.e. female focus, and not commercial. But I think the dressmaker, you know, put the nail on the coffin of that argument.
And we hate to go, it's a great case study, but it is. It's a case study of success, of showing you can have strong female protagonists, you can have a strong, you know, female crew, a strong female director, you know, but, and it be successful.
I feel like we, in the box office, we have a number of case studies, but, you know, people tend to turn a blind eye to case studies very often. Well, Sue, are we doing enough? Are our screen bodies and agencies, are they doing enough?
They're working really hard on this. Because they do recognise, you know, it's a cultural problem, and a problem going forward for the industry as well, because it just does a disservice to audiences and does a disservice to, you know, opportunities for women to tell stories on screen. So the whole range of things have happened, ranging from, you know, massive funding injections such as, you know, the $5 million development fund under Screen Australia's Gender Matters, through to policy decisions like firm targets, you know, 50-50 by 2020, towards quotas in some instances. So, yeah, there's a range of things that are all happening. And look, it's no surprising in the middle of all of this, you know, the bombshell of Me Too dropped. It's kind of like this moment in history where women are just saying, hey, enough. We're not putting up with this stuff anymore. The culture has to change.
And when you have the intersection of the Me Too movement against the changing landscape of cinema more broadly and of kind of on-screen content, I feel like at that intersection there really is chance for actual change.
I think it's generational, to be honest. Yeah. I think you just have to get the baby boomers, me included, out of the way. And get those, you know, because it's been an ageing demographic. You know, it's mostly guys who are in those, you know, in the positions of deciding what goes onto our screens in this country. And they used to be in their 20s and the 70s, and then, you know, in their 30s, their 40s, their 50s. They've aged with the industry. And it's, you know, over the next 5 to 10 years, you'll see, you know, the gradual, and it's happening right now, you know, the retirement or the moving on. And it's creating opportunities. And it's so important that we see women, you know, stepping up and, you know, grasping those opportunities as they arise.
I guess the thing I know for a lot of emerging practitioners is we're almost getting afraid of, you know, here are these great initiatives. I mean, Gender Matters report came out, nobody was shocked. Seeing Ourselves, Reflection of Diversity in Australian TV Drama came out, nobody was shocked. But now, you know, in the last 48 hours, we've got this really active Make It Australian campaign. You know, we're fighting just to keep our Australian industry alive here. We're having to petition and almost beg for quotas to ensure that in this new industry, in this new marketplace, that we can even get an Australian voice out there.
And this is, you know, one of the consequences of this, you know, disrupted business I was speaking about. The fact that it's global and it's digital. There are no boundaries. So you've got, you know, some economic rationalists who are saying, well, that's great, you've just got to compete internationally. Well, fine, but let's just look historically We lost the Australian film industry once, you know, back at, you know, in the 20s and 30s. It completely disappeared, and we did not have Australian stories or voices for nearly 50 years. We cannot afford to let that happen again, and it will happen by attrition if there's no real political commitment on both, both parties to ensuring that Australian, voices and Australian stories continue to be heard.
And that was what was fascinating at the start of the documentary. We actually get that moment in history where there are no films being made, and Jill and, everyone's kind of, the government has enforced quotas on, if you're doing advertising, it must be Australian. So that's where people had to start learning how to make films again. And we don't want to go back to that, but it's a beautiful reminder of how far we've come in that time, and
how far back we have to go.
And let's hope not.
Yeah, it is a beautiful reminder of that, but it also reminds us of the vulnerability.
Yeah.
And, if we have a situation where we have, the major buyers being international subscription or platforms, and that they have absolutely no particular interest in acquiring Australian content or local content, and really we are a market, which we are, then it becomes a very, very one-way transaction. And that's what happened years ago with Hollywood, where we were a market and that was it. And we lost our industry. We just don't want that to happen again.
Sue Maslin there, the executive producer of Jill Bilcock, Dancing the Invisible, which releases theatrically this month.
And this Thursday, there is a Q&A screening of this documentary playing at Nova, if anyone's interested. Highly recommend you go.
So, look, Gina, we've barely scratched the surface of editing and the importance of editing, but I'm thrilled that we've gotten to spotlight this documentary, which itself spotlights one of our most iconic editors.
And some of our most fabulous Australian
It's a
films.
Celebration yeah. of Australian cinema. Yeah. So thank you to Jill Bilcock for joining us this evening. Thank you to Sue Maslin for joining us this evening. And thank you as well to Nicole for helping us organise this evening too.
Thank you to Simon for the news, as
thank
always.
You to everyone.
Taking care of us. Brendan, who's sitting in the background. We'll explain who Brendan is in a couple of weeks' time, hopefully.
That's it for another week on Outtakes. You are listening to Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.